You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Låt oss då mestandet, låt oss skötestet, kärnkelsoet, en kolsandet skälten hålla.
Our land is not for sale or to give to anybody. When the Creator gave us this land to live on, there was no white man on this island, for he was across the ocean. That's where his papers are. Not here in this land. For his laws are written down in paper. For he never said that the paper will be your law. Never, as long as we live.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Inteligente de Indigena.
Intelligent de radio.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. If you've been paying attention to the news in the United States recently, you've been hearing about Elizabeth Warren. Now, I have nothing against her policies in terms of her stance on the Democratic ticket. She seems to be a reasonable person, and she's putting up the stance against the lunatics here that call themselves Republicans and conservatives. So, you know, all of that's well and good, but there's a problem. She also has identified herself as a Native American. Which, for those of you who've been following this show for about a decade or so, you know that's a very touchy subject. It's always been a very touchy subject in Indian country, outside of Indian country. And as I've mentioned on a few previous shows very recently, I find a little bit hypocritical that not so much that the Native community in the United States is upset with Elizabeth Warren and they feel offended. It's not that. This just a little political an ethical hypocrisy about this. Now, we're talking about the Cherokee Nation, which we have to be clear. There was a lot of historical mishigas when it comes to being Cherokee. You know, one of the quote-unquote five civilized tribes. Now, you hear me, you know, harp on that on various shows for a reason. Because we talk about colonialism here, and we talk about what the damage colonialism does. Whether it's Europeans coming to the Americas or the Chinese in Tibet, we're talking about damage to a people, damage to a culture. What we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is genocide. We're talking about a violation that is understood under international law to be anti-human. So we can't go back to the past. And this is where I will agree with the Dalai Lama. You know, old Tibet is no more. If they become free, they will be forever different because they've been influenced by the West, they've been influenced by China. There's not too much that can be done about that, but you can move forward in a conscious light. This is the argument that we've been making on this show and with the Aboriginal News Group in our efforts. We cannot go back, but we can definitely go forward. And when it comes to Elizabeth Warren, yes, she should definitely, definitely be reminded that it is completely wrong and unfair. You know, and it just, you know, smacks of the racism that our people suffer in this country, our own country, you know, from Europeans in particular, when they will adopt, you know, our names, our images, and also our very identities. Because one of the things, ladies and gentlemen, when you hear me, you know, complain, and I'm going to admit, I'm complaining about the attitude that non-natives, you know, primarily Europeans. And, you know, I'm not leaving out Africans too, which also adds another wrinkle to this, which, you know, we are going to get into what I guessed. You know, I mean, this is a, you know, a personal thing for me. The Cherokee Nation voted out their African members twice. Now, they try to qualify by saying that they voted out their freedmen members, meaning the people who are listed on the freedmen rolls, of which there are several, of which there are a couple of dozen for the Cherokee Nation itself. You know, we're talking about a lot of crazy things, and, you know, I'm going to go on a lot of tangents, I'm sure, because there's so many doors to this. But I want to introduce Jeff Korntassel right now, who is a member of the Cherokee Nation from Oklahoma, and he actually resides right now in occupied Canada. So we're going to discuss the issue of Elizabeth Warren, and, of course, we're going to get into War Churchill, because you just have to when you discuss this subject. We're also going to talk about what I mentioned a couple of shows ago in terms of Black Indians. You know, we have a lot of people who more than likely are Native. I mean, you know, the last time a study was done, a random DNA test was done, it was like 70-some-odd% of the African people, you know, had measurable, you know, Native bloodlines. I mean, it's part of the slavery history here of this country. You know, the Cherokee Nation became civilized because they adopted European ways very fast, and they also adopted slavery. And we also know what happened during the slavery period. There's a reason why African people in the United States come in different shades, you know, and eye colors and hair types and so on. So it's the same thing in Indian country, and, you know, this isn't discussed. And while we could be talking about the racism that we have adopted from the people who have colonialized us, you know, we're not, and we're focusing right now on Elizabeth Warren and other people who are really easy to pick on, like War Churchill. And, you know, I find it funny that they would pick on someone like him in particular, being that he has made arguments for Native people that a lot of our people do not make, regardless of what you think about him in terms of ethnic things. You know, I've met the man, you know, he might be, he might not be. But in terms of his actual work in articulating what happens to us, it's important. So now that I've run my mouth long enough, Jeff Korntassel, thank you for being on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio this morning.
Thank you.
All right, so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. One of the reasons that I'm very glad to speak to you is that you are of the Cherokee Nation. You are from the United States, but you're now residing in Canada.
That's right. So, I've been up in Canada for the last 9 years or so, at the University of Victoria Indigenous Governance Program, and kind of joked that I was a refugee from the war on terrorism, but I came up here because the program here was pretty unique, and I came out from Virginia, so I was living in Virginia Blacksburg, Virginia at the time. So, yeah, I've been up here for 9 years, and it's interesting as a point of comparison, you know, looking at these discussions about identity, both in Canada and the U.S. and even elsewhere around the world, and how these things play out in these different state contexts.
Yeah, I mean, it's become amazing. And last night I interviewed someone, David Sheen, who is in Israel, who's a resident in Tel Aviv. And, excuse me, you know, if our listeners are not aware, there's an anti-African mass riot going on in Tel Aviv, and it's starting to spread to other parts of the country. At first they were saying that no one knew what the cause was, but it turns out that it was actually politicians who called for a cleansing of the state of Israel of non-Jewish Africans. And they came up with the same old thing that natives have heard on the, you know, border areas here, you know, to protect the women, you know, mm-hmm. to protect themselves from the menace on the outside. You know, racism, you know, I mean, racism itself, you know, let's be clear, it's not a set of attitudes, but a system.
Yeah.
And, you know, now that you're in Canada and you have, you know, access to different news, more informative news, I would think, more international news, and you're aware, of course, of what's happening further south, and, you know, cases like Israel, and then we had the Cronulla riots in Australia. We have Maoris that have just been sentenced in New Zealand for a raid that occurred that basically violated their rights completely. And it was more than a police state action. These were indigenous people working with, in concert, with white New Zealanders who support indigenous rights and who are being called traitors now by their own people. Jeff Korntassel, as an educator, what do you see happening in this new paradigm? In terms of white supremacy, white nationalism, and the territorial issues that indigenous people, you know, and cultural issues that indigenous people have always faced.
Yeah, I guess it looks a lot like the old paradigm. It just kind of call it shape-shifting colonialism. You know, it's it takes new formats, you know, kind of in the, under the guise of anti-immigration, right? Or, you know, homeland security. And takes new names, but really the crux of it is still deep down is still the repression of the state, and it's the criminalization of indigenous peoples and other peoples of different cultural backgrounds. So, you know, that criminalization now, you know, I saw it firsthand up here with the disbandment of the West Coast Warrior Society, for example. Back in 2006, and you see it ongoing with the protests against the Enbridge pipeline. I don't know if the folks have heard much about it. There's Enbridge is proposing a pipeline from the Alberta oil sands, which the U.S. is also looking to get a pipeline down into Texas. It's called the Keystone Project, all the way to Kitimat, to the West Coast, so they can ship out oil. And so folks who are protesting that, it's gonna cross at least 40 different indigenous, you know, nations territory. Folks that are protesting that are being called, in some cases, terrorists or insurgents, right? So it's that continued criminalization of indigenous peoples who are fighting for their land, for their self-determining authority.
Yeah, I mean, we were aware here, I forget what year it was, that it leaked that the Canadian government basically views all indigenous people within their territory as potential terrorists.
Yes, yes. Yeah, in fact, it came out in I don't know if you saw this, but in one of their kind of army training manuals, they basically listed warrior societies as terrorist groups. And that was in the initial draft. After a lot of protest, it disappeared. But it hasn't really disappeared in the mindsets of a lot of Canadians and a lot of other people that make policies like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Castanina, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correct, Horn of Mohawk Nation News. I remember when she and her co-editor were attacked at the border.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a heart attack. I mean, we're talking about an elder.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was just no respect, no mercy for this woman.
Yeah.
And there's a documentary that some of our listeners may be aware of. I'm sure you can still find it if you look for it, called Not So Friendly Neighbor. I believe that's the title. Basically, looking at the abuses against First Nations people in Canada. And Stephen Harper hasn't been a friend to his neighbors at all, has he?
No, no. In fact, I think he's really calling for kind of the glorification of Imperial Canada, right? And, you know, has cut a lot of Indigenous programs recently under the guise of budget cuts. But this is a person who said, we have no history of colonialism in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So hard to take the guy seriously.
Well, in France, it's against the law to say that colonialism is bad.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's recent. One of the last things Sarkozy did before he was ousted by the socialists.
Oh, okay. So. Interesting. So this, you know, these struggles continue. And I think, you know, it's still fundamental for Indigenous peoples, you know, to fight for our land and culture and community. And yet we have all of these... I call them the politics of distraction, right? We have the Elizabeth Warren case, and we have all these different things that are distracting us from the real issues at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that the Cherokee Nation, if they were serious, could be bringing up is, when are we going to take their issues to the United Nations? And the United Nations, I should remind our listeners, has actually said, it's about time. Give the native people back their lands, honor the treaties. So,
exactly.
You know, we haven't heard too much from the U.S. State Department on this, but it's been said. And that, of course, would, you know, have to raise the question of Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Marshall Islands, all of these other quote unquote protectorates. You know, where is, you know, in your opinion, North America as a whole in this, especially in terms now of immigration, because our brothers and sisters south of the Rio Grande are our brothers and sisters.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, what is the Canadian mindset for the average person on the street in terms of Aboriginal rights across North America right now?
It's hard for me to speak to that, other than to say there seems to be more awareness here among the average Canadian of Indigenous issues. I see it a lot more in the news, for one thing. And we have this this Truth and Reconciliation Commission that's ongoing to address the, you know, the genocide of Indigenous peoples during the residential school era. So that was an era where Indigenous kids were forcibly taken and put into schools, not allowed to speak their language, similar to boarding schools in the U.S., from roughly the 1880s all the way till 1996, when the last residential school closed. So there is that awareness, and, you know, Harper made an apology in 2008, I believe.
Yeah, so after saying that colonialism never happened.
That was the same person that said colonialism never happened about a year later. So he made this apology, and this Truth and Reconciliation Commission is ongoing. They're taking testimonies from folks, from survivors in regional locations. But it's been very narrow. So you're not allowed to address the perpetrators of these crimes, unlike most, you know, truth commissions throughout the world. You're not allowed to address the perpetrators or name them unless you do so privately. And there's no repercussions for the perpetrators. So it's survivor focused, which is, you know, great, a great step, but it's not truly engaging with the people who did these crimes, and also the wider kind of non-Indigenous community who can show up to these events if they want, but they're really not being fully engaged in terms of what they should be doing to address these injustices. And I guess my other sense of this too is it makes it a little too clean and neat. Because it's kind of saying we're going to turn a page in history, you know, we're going to move on, that sort of thing. But yet, you know, land has still been stolen, hasn't been returned. So there's no address in the deeper issues of land restitution, even, you know, cultural regeneration and resurgence. So, it's under the guise of promoting justice, but it's not going deep enough. And so that's Canada in a nutshell for me, is that they have very good PR and they do throw money at a lot of, Indigenous issues. Some of them, you know, very positive, but there's not a deeper engagement. And when you get down to it, there's still that criminalization of Indigenous peoples, whether it's for fishing. You see this all the time with the Department of Fisheries. They've criminalized people fishing on their own rivers, whether it's Chiam First Nation or other Indigenous nations, you know, trying to not only have a livelihood, but to fish for ceremonial purposes. They're denied these permits, and so they choose to fight and continue to honor these really treaties they have with the fish, with the salmon. And they're constantly being patrolled and policed by and harassed by DFO. So yeah, there's a kinder, gentler face to Canada, but when you dig down beneath that surface, there's still a lot of repression and injustice.
Yeah, because we're going to take a break in a moment, but one of the things, you know, I do want to talk about our missing sisters up north. Mm-hmm. No one's really talking about this, and I applaud the women who have been, you know, doing their best online and through the other citizen media to try to get this out on the complete lack of respect for Native women.
Yes.
In terms of sexual assault, sexual violence. I mean, there was this report recently from Vancouver, BC, of, you know, an official, you know, report of police officers just taking advantage of the prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say the sex workers. Down in BC along Granville and so on. It was, my wife and I were looking at it and we were just disgusted that this was happening, and it completely blew, you know, her her view of Canada. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm the Angry Indian and we're speaking with Jeff Korntassel about being Indian in the 21st century and what that means. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
This is Radio Anglo-Indian. Anglo-Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power of making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
This is Howard Zinn. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced false news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Bonjour and Osio, this is Charles Fiddler. I'm listening to Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm your host, The Angry Indian. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, broadcasting to the international Aboriginal community from radioforall.net. And we are also blogging this podcast from our FeedBurner RSS feed, Aboriginal Press Radio. And we are also carried by another widening network of independent information providers not financially hamstrung by the corporatist news model. And that includes Berkeley Liberation Radio. Check them out at berkeleyliberationradio.net. For more information on the news items and opinions discussed on this internet radio broadcast, please visit our electronic newspaper at aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com. And you can also peep our news items at aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. You can also leave us a polite voicemail at Aboriginal News Group via Google Talk, and you can always email our studios with your opinions, suggestions, and complaints to Aboriginal Radio at lavabit.com. So now, welcome back my brothers and sisters of the Fourth World, our non-Aboriginal ideological comrades, and the negative elements staunchly opposed to human justice and social harmony, but in spite of all that, you take the time to listen to the show on the sly anyway. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, and we're speaking to Jeff Korntassel. He is a resident of Occupied Canada, and he and I are discussing the focus of Indian country in North America. And when we say North America, we're including the entire goddamn continent. We're talking about Occupied Canada, Occupied United States, and Occupied Mexico. And we're talking now about the media attention that's been paid to Elizabeth Warren's claims. And I'm going to tell you, it's, you know, it smacks of hypocrisy on both sides. We have Republicans who don't give a damn about Indigenous people all of a sudden wanting to argue on the sanctity of Indigenous identity. And I'm looking at a search engine right now, ixquick.com, and I put in Elizabeth Warren, fake Indian, just to see what would come up. And exactly that came up. Michelle Malkin, a pure conservative, a pure conservative. Elizabeth Warren, fake Indian. Another taxing problem for Elizabeth Warren. Well, that was handled respectfully by the Boston Herald. But Breitbart.com, said, did Elizabeth Warren plagiarize her powwow chow recipes? you dig this? I mean, going on, was it the Romney camp? Somebody from the Romney camp said that she was full of Sitting Bull and called her a fake Indian. That's being reported by Mother Jones. The Gateway Pundit, phony Indian Elizabeth Warren claimed she was a Native American. AppealDemocrat.com, Elizabeth Warren dances with lies. Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we got the mascot issue, which has been plaguing our people for I don't know how long. I mean, it's a clear violation of the 1948 law on the prevention and punishment of genocide. We're talking about the Raphael Lemkin codified in black letter law international proscription and recognition of genocide in terms of imagery. Now, this is what Julius Streicher was taken to the gallows for in his newspaper, The Stürmer, The Storm in English. It was a complete anti-Jewish rag. I mean, they also had cartoons against Asians, against African people, because we can talk about the Sudanese colonial army that was brought in by the French after World War I. Many of these men settled in Germany, and they started families. So, you know, this was one of the excuses that was used by the German Nazis to, you know, ramp up the violence and the xenophobia in Germany during the 30s. So, you know, we're talking about something that is not new. So when we look at the Washington Redskins, when we look at the Atlanta Braves and so on, we're seeing, you know, this sort of racism, this sort of colonialism, this sort of genocide. It's in our faces, but we're not really talking about that to the same degree we are right now at our dinner tables as we're talking about Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, Jeff Korntassel, if you could speak on why, because you've been bringing this up, why are we not focusing on, let's say, the mascot issue and what this does to the identity crisis that many Native young people and many Native elders are facing in the United States and Canada and Mexico, for that matter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's baffling to me, you know, as you're reading out all those names of how many Indian experts are suddenly coming to the surface here. Mm-hmm. You know, suddenly they're experts on Cherokee identity, on citizenship, all these things, and you know, all for, you know, political cause. And yeah, I call it the politics of distraction. And it's really, you know, really masking some deeper issues about our self-determining authority to determine our own membership, you know, our own citizenship as indigenous nations, but also, you know, the deeper issues of land and land reclamation, getting our, you know, our languages back and things like that, that are really the pressing issues. And, as you mentioned, even with Ute, and, you know, there are on several reservations and even reserves up here in Canada, there have been suicide watches. So, these are the issues that are pressing, you know, day-to-day survival, you know, diabetes and promoting food security and food sovereignty. So, yeah, we kind of dance around these issues, and the ones that get picked up are usually the ones like this on identity. I think people are so fascinated with it, they can't look away, and I don't quite understand it. I guess there's always been a fascination with Cherokee identity, but, you know, it's always kind of the default nation that people pick up, mm-hmm. when they're not sure who they are. And from anyone from, you know, Cher to even Johnny Cash, you know, we're claimed to have some Cherokee ancestry. But, you know, and this is kind of in a backdrop too of, you know, Obama was adopted by the Crow Nation, right mm-hmm. before the election, the first, you know, his before he became president. And so he's given the name Barack Black Eagle. And then you fast forward, you've got Johnny Depp being adopted by the Comanches. So you have these weird, I guess, constellations of events, you know, where indigenous nations are adopting people, And yet at the same time, you have people like Elizabeth Warren, who's really, I guess, this whole situation is symptomatic of university systems, you know, the academic industrial complex, trying to make itself look more diverse than it is. Mm-hmm. So it's always about, and it's always been a battle over self-identification. And one of the things that I like to point out, and you know, some of our colleagues like Leroy Little Bear, sorry about that, Blackfeet scholar, always says, you know, a few generations ago, it wasn't a choice whether or not you're indigenous, right? You grew up in a community and you were assuming the roles and responsibilities in that community. You know, and you think back to even there's a Supreme Court case called U.S. v. Rogers in 1846, where there was a white guy who basically married a Cherokee woman, and he was accused of murdering someone. And the Cherokees basically said, he's one of us.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
He lives like a Cherokee, so he's one of us. And then you fast forward, you know, to now, and it's you know, folks are confused. They're in some, you know, there's according to the different government agencies, they'll define indigeneity differently. So at one point, I think David Wilkins looked at different definitions and constructions of indigenous peoples in the U.S., and they found 24 different definitions, depending on who you're talking to, whether it's Department of Interior or, you know, Indian Health Service. Mm. So, yeah, you have all these different things, and then you have, I think the underlying problem is this notion of self-identification, and without any accountability to that particular nation that you are claiming some sort of affiliation with. In this case, Elizabeth Warren checked a box and, you know, and said, and she's continuing to say that, you know, her mama told her that she had Cherokee ancestry, and that's her sole basis for identifying. And, you know, the genealogical stuff hasn't held up. I'm not sure, you know, even what it might show, but, you know, it's time for her to at least come clean about, you know, what she knows about her, you know, about her roots. And you have to go much deeper than, you know, my mom told me this. You have to, you know, indigenous nations like Cherokees, we have our own membership codes, our own citizenship mm-hmm. codes. And so if you're not recognized as a Cherokee, you have to come clean on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of folks have tried to, you know, corner me. And they're like, well, I hear you talk about being Gullah Geechee. I'm like, well, that's my father's nation. And under their rules,
yeah,
I'm in their nation. Well, why do you say that you're indigenous? I said, well, because I am indigenous. Yeah, but you also say that you're Native American. Because I am. Why? Because of my mother. Why? Because yeah. she's Native. Well, why? Yeah. Because her mother was Native, and her mother was Native, and it's matrilineal, yeah. and that's how I do it. But I do not claim a nation or a tribe. I just say that I'm indigenous. Why yeah. do you do that? I'm like, because, one, you know, I know the history of the Cherokee, and why would I want to fight to be someplace I'm not wanted?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, my mother's, you know, lineage, you know, came from slave blood.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing about it is, it was all, I mean, I can go and make the argument that we all look at. I mean, people have pulled me out in Idaho and like, well, you're Indian, huh? Right. So, you know what I mean? That's neither here nor there. But the idea is I'm going by the tradition. Now, yeah. my mother's father was Jewish.
Yeah.
I don't claim to be a Jew. Now, if her mother was Jewish by the law, I would, you know, by the cultural law, I would have to say that I was
mm-hmm.
because that would be, that's the rule. And it's like, yeah, but I don't understand why you don't. I said, because being, you know, claiming a nation is a political thing as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of levels to this. If I start running around saying, yes, I'm Cherokee One, I don't have recognition from the nation, either in Oklahoma or in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have it and really don't want it, you know, being that they went twice to vote us out. Not yeah. interested. You know, and my family is not on the freedmen roll anyway. If I really wanted to, I could make an argument because, you know, my family's listed on one of the rolls. Like, I want to say the Dawes, but I'm not sure. Because there's mm-hmm. so many, and who the hell knows any goddamn way? Because these are white people that were making these rules.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, and as far as my family is concerned, and this is what I stick with personally, if you're not at least a quarter, you really shouldn't make any kind of claim.
Mm.
And that's me personally. I mean, the only reason I even bring up my Philippine and Jewish background is because there were certain cultural things that we maintained.
Sure.
And that is just an identification. I do not claim to speak for anybody.
Absolutely.
And as far as the Gullah, you know, that would probably be the only nation I probably would make a claim to speak for, because I can talk that way. My family goes too deep in that. And like you said, if I go home, I'm recognized.
Yes.
As such, because someone knows so-and-so down the line, so-and-so down the line. I've had to deal with this, where you actually sit in a circle and people are like, wait a minute. So-and-so, we know your people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the tradition down there, and I had to go through that. Now, if I went to Oklahoma, there are people like, I know so-and-so. But that doesn't mean I can show up at a cultural event and say, I have a right to be here. I belong here. Nobody knows me. You know, and a lot of folks who don't understand Native culture, at least as it operates in the United States, is extremely conservative.
Yeah, it is. It is. it's one of those things, you know, we're rooted in kinship, rooted in, you know, our relationships. And, you know, one of the first things that most natives will ask me is, you know, who are you related to? You know, if they first meet me, just given the way I look, you know, I have a paler complexion. They'll say, you know, who are you related to? And, you know, you go through kind of your relations, and that's when they say, okay, I know who this is, and I know how this family fits in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always, you know, we've always based it on relationships. And, you know, when you superimpose a political legal requirement on top of that, you get into trouble, because, you know, you have suddenly it's a descendancy from the Dawes Rolls. Well, not everyone signed on to the Dawes Rolls and was recognized that way. So, it's a really tough system. And like you said, it's fairly conservative. And, you know, there's, Bob Thomas used to say, he's a Cherokee anthropologist, he used to say, you're Indian if you have Indian relatives. Well, you know, that's great. And that's, you know, that's the kind of thing I always encourage folks who are finding their roots and that sort of thing. Go find your relatives. But at the same time, don't expect to be embraced by them. Sometimes you're embraced by them, but not necessarily the nation. So, you know, there's for Corntassel, a name like Corntassel, you know, I've got a lot of relatives in, you know, all over, but, you know, Westville, Oklahoma is where a lot of our allotments were. And so I can go back there and folks know who I am. And that to me is the most important thing, is that there's that relationship, those kinship, recognition by folks in community. That's not necessarily that political legal part of just being an enrolled citizen. But nowadays we have to look at the enrollment too, because there's so many folks who claim identity, you know, Cherokee identity or other identities. And it makes it really tough. It's, you know, that's why I mentioned the U.S. versus Rogers. You know, Cherokee said he's Cherokee because he lives like a Cherokee.
Yeah, he didn't say that he was of Cherokee blood or he looked like a Cherokee. Yeah,
that's right. They said he lived like a Cherokee. So they said he's one of us. And, you know, think of how far we've come now where, we're talking about disenrolling folks, and we have disenrolled folks, and, you know, and other nations are following suit, whether it's over, you know, dividends from a casino, or whether it's just over a personal family grudge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, folks are getting disenrolled.
Yep.
David Wilkins did a Lumbee scholar out of Minnesota, did a kind of a look at disenrollments and found that in the last 5 years or so, about, I think it was something on the order of 8,000 people have been disenrolled.
Hmm.
Right. So from their nations, and, you know, for various reasons, but, you know, we're seeing on one hand, the Obamas and the Depps getting adopted symbolically. And then you have these disenrollments that are occurring. It's a really, you know, like you said, it's a really conservative field.
Well, the thing is, I can deal with the conservatism if it has a direction. And what I mean by that is, if people were really doing this to preserve our identity, to preserve our survival as a people and as nations, then, you know, I could deal with it. But where I, you know, have a problem with certain hypocrisies is, you know, let's go back historically and ask ourselves where a lot of these things, you know, came in. Now, that conservatism, I believe, was always part of jerky culture.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a very, it was conservative before Europeans got here. And it's still conservative. But the thing about it is that conservatism is what I feel led to the confusion. Because when Europeans came, there had to be, when we look at the Major Ridge issue and say Stan Waddy and why he supported the Confederates, the idea, this is the power structure. We can't beat them. There's too many of them. They're still coming. So we might as well just buck in and go with it. And if we have to do this and do that, we'll do so. And with the influx of so many Europeans in the nation, Ridge, I don't remember his breakdown, but he was fairly mixed. I mean, how many leaders of the nation have been full bloods?
Yeah, that's I don't have that like right off the bat, but yeah, John Ross was, I think, was 1/16th or 1/8th. And he led, you know, Cherokee Nation from, you know, before removal all the way through the Civil War, so as the principal chief. So yeah, I let's get to blood quantum just a little bit. One of the issues I have with blood quantum is it's kind of based on this notion of blood carries culture. And it's, you know, is I think it's been I think it's a fallacy to think that, you know, the more blood you have, the more culturally in tune you are. And, you know, that's, I find it, and that's what I find really strange about this Elizabeth Warren thing too, is that they're, you know, they're asking her, okay, what would your blood quantum be? Well, you know, we're not dogs or horses, you know, we're talking about, you know, our pedigree or something like that. So, you know, but unfortunately, a lot of nations, about, you know, about 2/3 of indigenous nations of the 566 or so that are federally recognized, they've adopted some form of blood quantum requirement. And, you know, you kind of go back and forth on that. Yeah, on one level, maybe, you know, that shows ancestry, it shows ties. But you have other nations that are actually reducing their blood quantum because there's so many folks that are marrying outside there, you know, outside the nation. So, yeah, it gets tricky with blood quantum. And, you know, I always joke with folks, you know, I think technically I'm, you know, 1/16th or something like that. You know, what part of you is native? I always say the best part. I'm all native.
No, the one that I hate is, what kind of Indian are you?
Yes. Yeah.
I hate that.
I do too.
It's like, what kind of European are you? And then they get offended.
Yeah, exactly. You know, where's your card to be a European or a white? You know, prove to me that you're Croatian or, you know, Irish.
That's one thing I want to go into, because when, you know, I was speaking earlier, and I don't know how clear I am, because, you know, it's just hard not to go on tangents with this.
Yeah,
I identify myself as indigenous. You understand that. I'm sure if I went and argued with Chad Smith, he'd understand that, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, you know, the average person really doesn't, and then, you know, actually gets hostile because they're like, what does that mean? Now, the thing about it is, if somebody's from France, or say their mother is French-German descent and the father's Croatian, and they say, or we identify them as a European, there's no argument.
Yeah.
Why is it, you know, because of, you know, what we're talking about now, you know that you're native.
Yeah.
Your family knows that you're native. You kind of know, you don't know, you're raised in the city. You don't really have an identity, but ethnically, you know what you are. Okay, so what do? You kind of want to identify, you don't want to identify, but you, because of the political issues, you don't claim a nation, even though you know, like I'll say, I know my family's from Oklahoma. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, I know how they got there, but that brings up an argument. So it's like, I know they're from Oklahoma. I can tell you where. If you want to go and make the argument, go ahead. And, you know, you can buy and all that kind of stuff, right? I dig all that. Okay, fine. So, you know, we got that. Okay, so now you say that you're indigenous. No one seems to understand that. So why is it that we'll accept European, but we won't accept indigenous? Which I find strange, because that's accepted in Brazil, is accepted in Mexico. Chile accepts this. Well, there's not too many of our people left in Argentina, but that was the general ad hoc term. You know, most of these nations have been dissolved by force through slavery and what have you. They didn't exist as entities any longer. So do these people not identify?
Yeah, it's I'm always at a loss of, you know, why folks are so obsessed, I guess, with Native identity.
And with tribal identity in particular.
Yeah.
And with the Cherokee, you know, like to go on a tangent with this. I have spoken with people who have told me that they truly believe that the Cherokee were one of the lost tribes of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And that they showed me, you know, documentation from their religious groups on this.
Yeah.
The Mormons actually teach something like this. The early English settlers, some of them, believe this, and this is one of the reasons why the Cherokee were not dealt with as harshly as they did others, not until Jackson, because there was always this belief that, you know, the Cherokee was somehow different from the others.
Yeah.
The Cherokee lived in homes, had villages, had religion, had a political system, you know, were very organized.
Yeah.
Also were the largest group in the South, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, knowing all of that and understanding how things over time in terms of colonialism, where the invading element now starts to try to identify itself with the landmass, with the environment, with the animal life, to try to make the connection that we have always been here.
Mm-hmm.
As a Cherokee, knowing all of these myths and stories and the total misunderstandings that come around, how do you feel that, you know, not so much real Cherokees, but, you know, even our Plains brothers and sisters, our coastal brothers and sisters, there's so much confusion that every Indian has long hair and lives in a teepee and rides horses.
Yeah.
And when you say that your people fished, you know, you know, it's like there's a lot of laughter and no one really knows what to think. I mean, how, as an educator, how do you deal with that?
You're always debunking stereotypes. And, that's what we were talking earlier about, ignorance. And, you know, I try to deal with the folks who, you know, who kind of root their ignorance in just lack of awareness. But then you have folks who are willfully ignorant, you know, who don't want to hear this and have this preset notion in their head. You know, and quite frankly, I've dealt with other educators who, you know, for all the PhDs and, you know, degrees that they have, are, you know, pathetic when it comes to understanding indigenous issues, and nor do they really want to understand. You know, one of the big issues I had at Virginia Tech, you know, kind of getting back to that mascot issue, is a professor said he thinks he's more Indian than me.
Oh.
And he's a white guy who had his own talk show. And he went in front of a whole class and said, you know, this Jeff Korntassel doesn't even look Indian. And so, you know, this is the kind of ignorance that you're dealing with. And I think, you know, to get to your earlier point, folks feel like they have a stake in it because, you know, the thing I always hear is, you guys are defeated. You know, you lost.
Mm.
And so this is how we deal with with our enemies. This is how we, you know, deal with conquered people. You're a conquered people. And I, of course, always challenge that. But I think this notion that, you know, natives are gone, but we have, you know, settlers have realized that, you know, they're on native territory. They want to create some sort of identity based on that. And that's where the mascots come in. You see a lot of them that were formed in the 1920s and 30s as a way, you know, right during this whole vanishing Indian kind of myth, as a way to pay, you know, their own white way to pay tribute. And you see that a lot with even this identity. I think it's a way of saying, look, we're one of you. We're part of you. You know, it's a classic colonial kind of statement. You know, we're identifying with you. because we're not just settlers. We have a right to be here on this land. So there's, I think there's a lot of guilt and probably all sorts of other complicated things in there. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, I'm always dealing with debunking these stereotypes and these myths and showing how they continue, they persist. You know, we talked about the criminalization of Native peoples. You know, that's part of the noble savage image. Mm-hmm. And that's part of all these images that have persisted throughout history. So challenging those and also showing folks that we're still here and that our treaties are still, you know, in force and from our perspective. And, we're still, we may not look the way folks expect. In fact, my favorite comeback to someone who says, you don't look Indian. I'll have to get your favorite one too. You don't look Indian. I always say, well, you don't look ignorant either, but apparently you are, you know. You find ways to challenge people and make them uncomfortable. And I think that's probably the best way I've found in our program and in elsewhere is we call it a pedagogy of discomfort. We make folks feel uncomfortable. And through that discomfort, folks are able to get beyond their kind of normal knee-jerk reactions to more substantive issues of identity, of even whose land they're on, and what obligations they have to the indigenous peoples of the territory that they live on. So it's like everything, it's complicated. We can go on for days on this topic, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll ask you a quick one, last one on this alone. Where would you, as a Native educator, with tenure at a university, how would you place War Churchill within this milieu of Native confusion? As somebody who has articulated the colonial aspects and the political aspects of what happens. And if anyone who's listening can find any fault in his work in terms of his arguments, I would love to hear them at aboriginalradio@lavabit.com because I can't find any. I mean, he's opened a lot of doors for me in terms of understanding how we got to this point. Mm-hmm. The point of Elizabeth Warren, you know, this being the number one thing in the same week that Johnny Depp has been adopted.
Yeah, I know.
And he's claimed to be Cherokee in the past, I believe.
He has, I know. It's like I said, it's the default. James Earl Jones, I think, is Cherokee. All sorts of folks. We need one big kind of citizenship drive or something. Swear everybody in, make them associate members or something. I don't know. Okay. War Churchill is, I think, symptomatic of this, maybe the deeper insecurity over your identity. So he used to identify as Creek and Cherokee ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was probably more honest. And it was, you know, the whole UKB associate membership, you know, I guess controversy and all that. I think it's a classic case of, you know, just be honest and upfront, because it's saying you have Cherokee Creek ancestry and not being able to say you're part of that, you know, necessarily a recognized part of that member, of that nation doesn't take away from your scholarship. You know, your scholarship stands on its own. You know, I don't put Andrea Smith in the same category, but she also is doing some great work on indigenous feminism.
Yes, she is. Yes, she
and
is.
So, you know, your listener should read Conquest and other works by Andrea Smith. She also had a similar thing where her mom told her she was Cherokee and that she was enrolled, but it turns out she's not.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take away for me the value of her work. And it just positions it differently. All right, so maybe she's not necessarily speaking as a Cherokee, but Conquest as a critique of heterosexism, as a critique of colonialism, especially as it's impacted women, stands on its own. Just like, you know, I think War Churchill's work on genocide stands on its own. So, you know, I just wish, you know, it's a bit like Elizabeth Warren that, War Churchill would just come clean. You know, and be truthful and honest. That's where I haven't felt like he's been up front. And Elizabeth Warren, you know, it's hard to group all these folks together because they're different in their situations. But Elizabeth Warren has just kind of dodged the question, in terms of you know, who she is and how she identifies. So, yeah, it doesn't take away from the scholarship. I think the value is in the message that they're bringing. Unfortunately, the way they're identifying and sometimes the way they're perceived is distracting us from those overall messages. So we should be talking about genocide right now. And, you know, people getting, you know, indigenous people getting displaced from their territories, getting, you know, assaulted on a daily basis. But instead we're talking about Elizabeth Warren and her running for Congress, you know? And that's a classic, you know, distraction from the real deeper issues of not only indigenous identity, but indigenous self-determination.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could be talking about this pipeline that's coming through and
exactly.
All of the people that are going to be, our people that are going to be hurt because of this. We could be talking about the Dinye who are still being bullied, you know, in their area. They've physically moved some of them to Northern California.
Exactly.
You know, we're not really talking about that. No one's talking about John McCain, the McCain-Udall bill that was behind that.
Yeah, we should be. Yeah, we need to talk about water and land and stopping this Enbridge pipeline. You know, those are the things that are going to affect our futures to a far greater degree than whether or not Elizabeth Warren, you know, has Cherokee ancestry.
Okay, last question.
Sure.
I said we're talking about Elizabeth Warren. Why is Indian country not speaking up about Leonard Peltier like this?
Right. Because I don't think folks, folks have short attention spans for one thing. And so Elizabeth Warren is the issue of the day. And Leonard Peltier has been in prison now for, over 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a political prisoner. So, yeah, I think...
more than 20 years. I mean...
Yeah, it's been more than 20 years, hasn't it?
Yeah, way more than 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, this has been on for decades now, you know, no relief, no justice. And we know full well that it's been brought up in court that they really don't know what the hell happened there.
No, they don't. They don't. You know, and I think he was, there's a huge push to get him pardoned and the FBI intervened, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
was a Slick Willie. He promised that, promised Indian country all kinds of things, spent two terms, waited 3 months before he left to visit Pine Ridge, made a lot of promises, went back to D.C., pardoned his brother, pardoned Mark Rich, pardoned some other white-collar crooks, and then he left.
Yeah. So.
And Leonard was still sitting there. Yeah.
Well, and I'll give you the, you know, you always follow the money, right?
Mm.
In this stuff. Why are we talking more about Jack Abramoff and basically his, you know, his big schemes of defrauding indigenous peoples
who wanted to be defrauded in some cases, and this is part of the embarrassment.
And he's more in the news than Leonard Peltier and other folks who are political prisoners. So it's always I don't know, it's, you know, his case, I guess, has more allure or more interest. Leonard Peltier, I think, makes folks feel bad about themselves. I say folks, you know, I mean mainstream society. They don't like to think that their system is unjust. And so, they focus on, you know, Elizabeth Warren and other folks that they can chime in on and give an opinion on related to our identity. And I think because it's such a personal issue, I think everyone feels like they can provide their opinion on it.
Mm.
When it's Leonard Peltier or other political prisoners, it's too complicated and it's not as newsworthy. So I guess part of this is just the marketing of the news.
Well, Sister Anna Maria Quash, the late Sister Anna Maria Quash, you know, this is, again, one of the issues that we could be talking about in terms of what happened to her, how it happened to her, how COINTELPRO worked, still works, you know, and how the movement was, you know, eaten up from the inside. You know, I'm not a blind you know, observer to this. You know, I understand how liberation movements work and how they turned inside out.
Sure.
You know, by the system. And when we talk about, when we raise the issue of Peltier, you have to raise the issue of anime. You have
Absolutely.
To raise the issue of what was happening in the boarding schools here. You have to raise a lot of issues and, you know, treaties, human rights issues, you know, why the Klan still exists in the United States and how the Senate defended them by not signing on to completely ratifying the 1948 convention that I mentioned against genocide in the United Nations. I mean, it just brings up, as you mentioned, so many questions on how we got here and the legitimacy of the current society.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether again, you know, I mean, when we talk about immigration, when I talk about immigration, you know, we do not talk about the fact that we are looking at indigenous brothers and sisters that are being forced up here because of economic and political reasons. When they stand up for themselves down there, you know, against these American companies and the businesses that are being fronted in Mexico.
Yeah.
It turns out incredibly bad for them. And I remember at one point where the Dine Nation or the Navajo were being criticized because they were defending a lot of these migrants. They said that when they reached, you know, the borders of their reservation, they were under their protection. And there was a lot of controversy, you know, in and outside of Indian country on whether or not they had the right to do that. And they said, well, look, we're a sovereign nation. They're under our protection.
Yeah.
They're Indian people and we're not going to turn our back on them. And this is what I wanted to see. But that was just one small incident that the mainstream news reported in terms of what right did they have, instead of reporting they had a right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, why aren't we talking about folks who are, you know, indigenous folks who are victims of violence, like John T. Williams in Seattle, you know, Nuchano Carver, who was shot by a police officer multiple times, carrying a small carving knife, right? He's shot in the back, right? And even more recently, a Navajo woman, Nicole Westbrook, was shot, in this case, by a drive-by shooting, you know? So, you know, these are kind of the everyday acts of violence that are confronting indigenous peoples today. And, you know, I think the bottom line is that, you know, folks don't know who they are. And I say that kind of, you know, in the broad sense. They don't, there seems to be a real identity complex among folks in the U.S. and even Canada in some instances. They don't quite know who they are, where they come from, so they adopt these U.S. and Canadian identities, but they don't really know very deeply about, you know, who their families are, who their kinship relations are, and more importantly, they don't know where they are. They don't realize they're on indigenous land, and they don't know the history of that. So I always tell folks, read up, like you were saying earlier. You've got to educate yourselves about where you are and what are some of the struggles of indigenous peoples in those areas. And, you know, take action under their direction. You know, what are some of the things that they're needing to survive as indigenous peoples?
All right. That's excellent advice. And I thank you, Jeff Korntassel, for being on the show.
Wado. Thank you.
All right, everybody. That's Jeff Korntassel. I want you to check out his blog at korntassel.net. And you can check out what he's doing on Twitter like I do at Jeff Korntassel, one word. You know, we've tried to, which is impossible. You know, we tried to touch on what was going through our minds about this particular subject. But, you know, brothers and sisters, we have to discuss these issues if we're going to move forward. You know, being indigenous is not easy. And if we go by the statistics that we're hearing in terms of the Native American population in the United States, by 2060, there probably won't be any of us left. And there's really not too much we can do about that. But as long as some of us are still around, we need to be able to make sure that the story is told truthfully about what is happening, what had happened, and how it happened, and who did it, and who suffered. You know, it's entirely fair, because when we don't do this, you know, we'll end up, you know, because it's going to happen. The United States and Canada is turning brown. It was brown anyway. You know, it's just going back to what it was. But, you know, let's be real here. We've been influenced by strange ideas, by strange people, you know. And we are going to make, I know this, if we're not conscious, we're going to make the same mistake that Africa made. They had your revolutions. You got physically, you know, the power structure changed and went to the indigenous population. And then what happened? Those that were influenced and accepted marginally by the European power structures maintained the colonial borders. They maintained the exact same educational system. They maintained the exact same social divisions. We saw how this worked out in Rwanda when the Belgians left. They had set these people against each other, and then you had a genocide, revenge, right after. And we're still looking at how that has completely damaged that area. They have not recovered. They're not likely to recover anytime soon. We'll end up being our own oppressors, because those of us that are brown who think white, and I'm not talking about white people as an ethnic group, because that's nonsense. I'm talking about the conception of whiteness. You know, do we really think? I mean, this happening in Mexico is going on in Brazil and has been going on in Brazil as long as the Portuguese have been there. Do we really think that we're going to somehow wipe away our problems if there are no more white people around? That's ridiculous, brothers and sisters, if you really believe that. And racial politics are not easy. They're not clean. And if you believe that it is a liberation movement, that you can bring up race, I don't care if it's Native American, African, what have you. Because we see our sick white brothers and sisters that are popping up around the world here in the United States, in Norway. We've just saw incredible violence from neo-Nazis. Incredible violence. Because they believe that their ethnicity somehow makes them better. That if they're all white and they have an enclave, that somehow they're safe. Israel thinks like that. And look at what's happening today. As Jeff Kontassel and I were speaking, Africans are being attacked on the street by Jews. Who historically, if anybody in the Western world should understand what we've been talking about here for this hour, those are the people that should understand. And what are we seeing? And, you know, we can say ignorance, and it is ignorance, but as our guest said, it's willful ignorance. We're talking about power. We're talking about land. And when you bring these factors into ethnic issues, you are always, always, always leading to a terrible conclusion. So we have to be sober. We have to be objective. And we have to understand what is happening, to whom, and whom is doing it. This has been Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I hope you learned something, because I know I did. If you want the man to get up off your back, remember, all you need to do is stand up. Sig it.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
My name is Gordon Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation in northwest coast of so-called British Columbia, Canada, and you're listening to Radio Intelligent Indigenous.